Coral reefs cover 1% of the Earth's surface, but they're home to more than a quarter of the world's fish, and the reefs are in danger. We've heard the stories: pollution, rising ocean temperatures, overfishing, tourism, all hurt coral reefs, including those in the Phoenix Islands in the Republic of Kiribati. Now, it's actually spelled K-I-R-I-B-A-T-I, but it's pronounced Kiribati, a series of islands in the Pacific just above sea level, and as we'll hear, slowly sinking. But after a decade of negotiation, Kiribati President Tong and researchers like Greg Stone from the New England Aquarium here in Boston have turned this nation of islands into the world's largest marine World Heritage Site, a protected area to end overfishing and try to protect some of the world's most spectacular coral. New England Aquarium researcher Randy Rogin traveled to Kiribati. I asked her to describe it.
Kiribati is a really remarkable country because they're huge and unheard of. Yeah. And the reason that they are so unheard of is because the majority of the country's ownership is of water and not of the land. So they are a group of three island archipelagos in the central Pacific. If you were to smush all of those archipelagos together to come up with one landmass, they would be about the size and population of Baltimore.
And how much space do they all take up?
Actually, if you were to superimpose them over the United States, you would see one island archipelago group in California, one on the East Coast, and one right in central United States.
Wow, that's huge. And Kiribati doesn't have its own fishing industry, but a huge part of their income comes from licensing those vast swaths of international waters to other fishing boats. We understand 20% of the world's fishing took place in the waters around the Phoenix Islands. So how does this work? Because it would seem that for President Tong to give this licensing money up, he's making an extraordinary gesture.
He did, but the world is also driven by economics, as well as, we hope, goodwill. President Tong actually did something pretty amazing with the help of Greg Stone and Tukubu Tararoko, who is another Kiribati citizen. And what they've done is they've created something called the reverse fishing license. And so the way this works is that a trust is currently being established by the New England Aquarium, Conservation International, and the Republic of Kiribati to raise quite a lot of money, which will endow this trust. This endowment will actually pay the Republic of Kiribati back the money that they would have made from allowing these fishing vessels to fish their water.
So protecting the coral reefs won't have too negative an impact on the Kiribati economy. But it still took a forward thinker like President Tong to recognize that it was worthwhile. And it took Greg Stone to get this started. This is the former vice president for conservation at the New England Aquarium, who went to the islands in 2000. What did he see?
He was blown away, just absolutely floored by the remarkable biodiversity and health of a coral reef ecosystem.
Why? What did he see down in the water?
Oh, 150 sharks every time you jump in the water and 100% coral cover. I mean, just blankets of live coral. The story is really that he went back to Tarawa, which is in the Gilbert Islands, which is the most populated archipelago of Kiribati. And he went to meet with President Tong in 2001 and said, "Do you know what you have? You have something spectacular and remarkable and amazing." And President Tong said, "Okay, great. No, we didn't know what we had, but so great to know that we have it. Let's protect it." And so with Greg Stone and President Tong, really one man and then two men's visions really changed the way that Kiribati was treating its coral reefs and said, "We need to protect this place."
Now, we understand that by international law, island nations have an exclusive economic zone, EEZE, extending 200 nautical miles offshore. So you have that authority, but then do you put a fence up? How do you stop pollution, for instance, from coming in? How do you stop fishermen from coming in?
Well, in some ways you can, and in some ways you can't stop all of these things. So what makes the Phoenix Islands in particular so special is that they are free from local human impacts. There's no regular resident pollution that's seeping into the water. So there's no people living on the shores or putting sewage or other sort of toxins into the waters. There's no development of the land for agriculture. There's also not a resident fishing population that's depending on that area for food. So in some ways, its remoteness and its lack of population already helps to protect it. One thing that's really important to state, though, is that even the most remote areas of the world are not free from global pollution and global changes. So anything that's happening on a global scale, you can't put up a fence. I mean, it's seeping into even the most remote parts of the planet. And so the fence that that Kiribati has so smartly built is a collaborative fence that works in collaboration with New Zealand and the United States and France to survey via video or satellite surveillance and flyover surveillance to see what's happening in that reserve. And the reserve is so hard to get to by boat. It takes days to get in and out that if a boat is caught, it Kiribati has empowered all of these neighboring governments to capture people on their behalf.
We read that they have caught fishing vessels that have been told, we don't want fishing in here, we're trying to protect this coral.
That's right. In fact, the fine is $10 million for illegal fishing in Kiribati, and they did catch somebody last year.
And just remind us, you know, why protecting coral from overfishing protects the coral?
You know, these are really, really complicated ecosystems, and they are very, very interconnected through all levels of the food chain. And so there are fish which are doing really important things to promote coral health. So they're either eating algae, which would otherwise overgrow the corals if it was allowed to grow freely. So we can think of some fish as lawnmowers, which are keeping the lawn closely cropped and allowing coral to really be the dominant placeholder. And actually, in return, there are plenty of corals that protect fishes by giving them homes. For some fishes, it's even a food source. The idea, of course, is that if you protect some areas, the fish and the invertebrates and all of the organisms within a protected area will be able to grow, proliferate, and eventually there will be more fish that will be available right. to fish at other places. And that's certainly true, but that's not the only reason to protect these places.
What is?
Their spectacular biodiversity, which we are rapidly losing.
Yeah. Have you been there? Have you been down to the coral?
I have.
What's it like?
Oh, it's pretty amazing. One of the most spectacular places to be, partially for its spectacular beauty, but also because of its history and what it's gone through. So the Phoenix Islands, I was there in 2009, are not the same islands that Greg first visited in 2000 because they've undergone a pretty severe bleaching event.
Bleaching of the coral?
That's right. So we actually are beginning to think of PIPA, the Phoenix Islands Protected Area, as climate change ground zero. When corals hit a certain temperature threshold, they lose the relationship with their symbionts. They have these sort of plant-like symbionts that live within their cells that use the sunlight's energy the same way plants do in order to make food. And so when corals bleach, when they reach that temperature threshold, the symbionts can't survive anymore. And the corals turn white. And over time, if they stay white for long enough and the symbionts don't come back, corals will starve to death because they won't have their plants inside of them making food for them. And, you know, the corals are actually what are maintaining those islands above sea level right now. You know, these islands it's corals which are growing and secreting a hard skeleton. And it's the coral growth that's keeping, you know, that's really maintaining much of the structure of these islands.
Boy, these people, you know, they really are endangered. You know, their homes are endangered. Their lives are endangered. We know the coral is endangered and everything that stands for. But because it's been declared protected, do you think you can help?
You know, one of the things that we like to use these remote protected areas for is as reference sites for what's happening in the rest of the world. They are natural laboratories to explore whether or not we can help, to see whether or not corals can recover from such severe bleaching events, to see if having an intact fish population can withstand what's happening at a global level and not look at all the interacting factors with everything that happens on a local level. And so it's a really important place to study how these ecosystems work in the absence of local human impact. As the world gets more and more desperate and looking to harvest fish from the oceans, they will, of course, go to some of the most remote places in the planet. And the time to protect them is now, before that desperation point hits.
That's Randy Rogin, a researcher at the New England Aquarium in Boston, talking about the work the aquarium is doing with the island nation of Kiribati. Randy, thank you.
Thank you so much.